Unfortunately, we historically have not had a lot of research material on women's health in the fire service in general, but just in the last 5 to 10 years, they've started looking at women's health in particular, and even more recently than that, women's hormone levels. And a paper that was just published 2-3 years ago finally said, aha, women's hormone levels are different in fire service.
March is Women's History Month, and we thought we'd dive in and talk about women's physical health in the fire service. We'll be talking about mental health for women in our next episode, but today we're going to focus on women's bodies, from physical strength to menstrual and reproductive health issues. And here today, sitting down with us, is physician Dr. Marcy Hamrick and clinical psychologist Dr. Beth Murphy from the Station 2 Clinic in Belltown. I'm your host, Jen Pennington, and this is Listen Up, L27. First of all, welcome back. Thanks for coming back and being here today. So I'm glad we get to do this again. I always learn so much from you, too. But Beth, I'm going to actually start with you and ask you to take off your clinical psychology hat for a moment and put your old firefighter helmet back on. When you were in the fire service, what were the biggest physical challenges on the job you experienced?
Well, I think the thing that stands out the most, being a firefighter, it's like if you're a man, you can be average in strength, physical health. For women, to be good as a firefighter, it's like you have to be exceptional. So you have to be strong. You have to be fit. You have to be healthy. When I got my doctorate, I did my dissertation on women firefighters' experience of stress on the job. That came out of kind of like my own personal experiences. And I used to think I'm the only one that thinks and feels this way. And I'm like, that can't be possible. So that's why I did that research. And so it's like there were women that experienced some things that I can understand where it came from because of the culture. But it wasn't necessarily something that I experienced personally. In my department, they had this attitude of, we want you to succeed. I mean, it wasn't just towards me. That was kind of everybody in my class. They teach you everything a certain way. Like you have to do things a certain way. You have to lift things a certain way. So there's a technique to everything. For women, some of those techniques, you might be able to do it, but you're not going to be your best at doing it. I think like lifting a ladder using the halyard, you know, generally it's just a hand over hand and you're doing it with gloves. Sometimes your hands slip and women are more likely to not have that grip strength like the men do. Plus, they also are often having to deal with the fact that they can't get the right fit for gloves or gear in general, really. And so that's kind of a subtle thing. So it's like you're doing hand over hand. Well, a way around that is to take your top hand on the halyard and turn it so your thumb is down. And then you kind of rotate your wrist. So you rotate away from you. So you put a little hitch in the rope. Now you have grip and you pull. And then same thing, hand over hand, same kind of thing where your thumb's down on the top hand and you roll your hand out and you get that little hit, so it gives you grip. And honestly, I think everybody should do it that way, because then you're sure you're not going to lose control of the rope. Obviously, that could be a bad thing. But women, it's like more something that they would need to do. The other thing is that we know that women don't have the upper body strength that men do. But lower body, they can be just as strong. Like I could squat 315 pounds. And so anytime there was an opportunity to use my lower body strength to help with a lift, I would do that. So sometimes it meant, you know, like doing a little squat and then pushing upwards. Sometimes it would mean popping my knee up to kind of help push something up. And in my department, that was actually okay. So nobody said, you can't do that. There was never a risk of failing because I found ways to assist me. And honestly, some of the stuff I did, it's like the men should be doing it too, because they were always complaining about like getting hurt or this, you know, like this lift hurt them. Because I learned to, I guess, compensate for that difference. In my research, the women that I talked to, a lot of them were threatened with failure, you know, like being failed out of a class or out of the academy or extending probation or whatever, because they couldn't do it, or they could, but it was like with great effort. So they couldn't do it the way the men said that they needed to do it, the way that it was like, this is how it's written, this is how we do it, no exception. And so they had to just kind of gut it out. And then in same kind of thing. So they're having to do all this. And the same for me when I first came in is all the gear I had was men's gear, and I had to find a size that would fit me. So it meant gloves were always a little too big. Even my bunker boots were a little too big. My jacket, that was always fun, because in order to get it to fit my hips, it had to be too big on the top, so the shoulders. So then I would have long sleeves that would get in the way. So it's like there were these challenges because of strength, of stature. And so that would make it difficult.
I think that's kind of interesting, because it seems like in doing that kind of training and whatnot, you could be prone to more injury by trying to do something in a way that doesn't naturally fit your body. And so what I would ask Marcy is, from your point of view, are there certain types of injuries or issues that you see that are affecting women more?
Yeah, I would say, first of all, in general, that women firefighters tend to have an established healthcare team already when they come to see me, which is wonderful. They often have primary care, sometimes a naturopath, a physical therapist, a chiropractor, any of those folks that are helping them out. I have read that certainly research suggests that women firefighters do tend to have more sprains, strains, cuts, abrasions from falling, sort of small day-to-day things. But I will say here at Station 2, I don't see that much, because either they aren't seeking care and they recover at home, or they already have their healthcare team set and they're helping take care of them. So on one hand, I know that women are getting injured more, likely for at least some of the reasons Beth was just saying. One of the sort of ill-fitting thing that I hear about from women is the height of the rigs, that stepping down from the rigs is not meant for someone who's less than 5'10", and that it can be really hard on hips and knees and feet. And I do hear about some of those injuries, and it makes perfect sense that they are happening more given the ill-fitting equipment and fire engines and trucks that they're riding on.
I did get a chance to experience being in the gear and doing a day. You get to do a day as a firefighter, and I hand it to all the women that do this, because just like you said, being in that gear, and I am 5'10", I'm usually very strong at certain things, like getting into that gear and the boots and everything, it was not easy. So let me ask you, when women firefighters come in for their annual exams, are there other concerns that they're coming to you with, injuries and sprains and things like that?
Yeah, I think on the whole, not to overly stereotype, but on the whole, women tend to be somewhat more in tune with how they're feeling. And so I do hear about feelings of frustration, anger, irritability, depression, anxiety, post-traumatic stress. Not that that doesn't happen in men for sure, but I feel like women may share it earlier in the course of those symptoms and possibly also be more willing to get help earlier, which I appreciate. And again, goes back to the idea that often women are more willing to have a healthcare team and ask for help.
Beth, do you want to add a little bit to that?
Yeah, well, I think it matters if they have somebody that they trust. And I really think, like, at Station 2, we have Marcy. She listens and she understands the job. So I do think that they're more willing to open up to her. I know that on the job, women are not as likely to share on the job, like, what's going on. So it's like they'll go outside. I mean, which maybe that is why they have a care team, because they wouldn't admit it when they were working. I mean, I know personally I worked longer than I should have with injuries. That's kind of the stereotype. And I think at this, you know, in 2023, we would like to think that that's not an issue, but it really is. I guess it's like the saying, I always heard this, is like women have to work 10 times harder. I think most women would agree, even today. And so because of that, they're less likely to talk about where they might be struggling.
You know, this is actually a good segue, I think, to something we want to talk about, which is some of the studies that have maybe been done on menstrual irregularities and menopause. And, you know, part of me wonders if a lot of this is due to the shifts, these long shifts. And nurses, I know, have some issues with some of this, too. But Marcy, maybe you can enlighten us a little bit here.
Unfortunately, we historically have not had a lot of research material on women's health in the fire service in general. But just in the last 5 to 10 years, they've started looking at women's health in particular, and even more recently than that, women's hormone levels. And a paper that was just published 2-3 years ago finally said, aha, women's hormone levels are different in fire service. And interestingly, even at the start of fire service, they compared hormone levels with a year later and found that those hormone levels are significantly different, estrogen being lower. So we know that our endocrine system, which is what controls all of our hormones in our body, including thyroid and cortisol and women's hormones and men's hormones, we know that with stress and irregular sleep, so it's probably not just fire service, that endocrine system becomes disrupted and can cause hormonal imbalances. Women's hormones that control menstrual cycle are just one of those hormonal systems at play that can certainly get disrupted by stress, irregular sleep, and probably some exposures that firefighters have in the course of their job as well.
As we have some female listeners out there thinking about, these are some of the things to kind of pay attention to. Mm-hmm. And then I know that, Marcy, you've also found there are some concerns around fertility and reproductive health.
Yeah, that's kind of hot off the press information. They did some work studying female firefighters and their fertility, and they found that firefighters have about a 30% infertility rate versus, in general in the U.S., that figure is about 12.5%. So it's a pretty significant difference in terms of fertility. Also relating to fertility and pregnancy, more pregnancy complications were found in firefighters relative to non-firefighter women, with a miscarriage rate over 2 times higher than their non-firefighter Wow. equivalents. And then preterm birth was also a risk factor, about 1.5 times higher. And interestingly, they found that preterm birth increased the longer women continued to work in operations while pregnant. Hmm. So departments don't have any standard rules around pregnancy for female firefighters. They haven't experienced this often enough to have any hard and set rules. So no one is saying, like, hey, as soon as you find out you're pregnant, you should stop working, or you can work through your first trimester and then stop. So there are women out there who are literally working in operations until the day they deliver.
Wow.
I can't imagine that either. Mm-hmm. But they certainly have shown more pregnancy complications in those women who chose to work longer through their pregnancy.
You know, those are some tough female firefighters.
They are.
I know it's been a really big issue with fire departments across the country. And for women, my husband is an attorney, and he's a retired deputy fire chief. He gets consulted a lot. He's part of a group of lawyers. They call them the firehouse lawyers. It's like a really big topic, because a lot of times the departments have arbitrarily just said, oh, you're pregnant, you're not working anymore. And so a lot of women won't even tell anybody until they start to show. So it's interesting to hear this research coming out now, because it's something nobody really thought about it. It was suggested, but it was not, there was really nothing that was really concrete and pointed to it. And so the kind of the rule of thumb has always been that, well, it's between you and your doctor for like the more progressive departments, but other departments, as soon as they found out, then they're like, nope, you're on light duty, or you're, you know, wherever. And I will say that more often than not, like women, like firefighter paramedics, they're the ones that are more likely to go longer on the job while pregnant than the ones that are actually interior fighting fires.
Oh, interesting.
Because you have to fit into your bunker gear. Right. It gets a little tight.
Well, I did connect with one of the authors of this research on women's health, Sarah Jenke.
Oh, yeah.
Who I think you know.
Yes, I was actually listed on one of her papers.
But after she presented this data at the IFF conference that I attended in December, she was saying it's hard to convince women to lay off when they're pregnant for reasons, I think, that go back to what you were sharing, is that they don't want to be perceived as being weak or incapable.
Yeah.
So they want to keep working through their pregnancies a lot of time. And she's saying we need to educate more so that people know it's in their interests, their best interest and their baby's best interest to actually lay off sooner.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting because that gets used against them often. And then the men often are like, well, if you get to have 9 months off, then I want 9 months off. You know, it's like they want that. So they want equality rather than that equity. Right. And it's really about equity.
Right.
So.
Right. Let's talk a little bit about the way we ought to listen to our bodies. I mean, sometimes how do you get there? I mean, it always sounds easier said than done. And as we've been talking about, women kind of push through some things sometimes. But what are some things that you really want women in the fire service to pay attention to?
I think that for anyone, men and women alike, being in tune with our bodies and noticing when something is persistent, when it's getting worse, what makes it come on, what makes it get better. It's funny because when I go to the doctor and I'm asked all these questions, I realize how little I know. But then I sit with a patient and I ask all these questions. And I'm like, why don't they know this? But it's hard to be your own good historian.
Yes.
And it really does take a sense of mindfulness of pausing and noticing and having curiosity. Because so often when we have a symptom, maybe we become afraid or we minimize it, and then our brain just has a story to help facilitate maybe putting it off, which would be, oh, this is nothing, this is probably something I ate. We naturally do that, but we also should notice that we're doing that and stay curious and step back. And almost like I think of it sometimes as like a scientist taking notes. Like, oh, okay, on this day, this happened, and this is what I did before that, and this is what I did that made it better. Ideally, I feel like it takes that sort of level of observation and curiosity and, I guess, mindfulness. And I think meditation is a tool that can help us gain that skill of being an observer of ourselves.
I like the idea of just documenting, even if you don't. I do that with certain foods because I happen to be allergic to a few foods. So, but that idea of just documenting something, if it feels a little off, write it down. So, Beth, maybe from your perspective, how would you look at somebody getting into the right state of mind?
Being able to find a way to step back. And like Marcy was suggesting, I mean, meditation is one really great tool to pay attention to that. There's a word. I want to use it. Interoception. So the inner state. some people are really good at it and other people are just kind of clueless. And some of that, you know, really comes from their upbringing. You know, I found that in my, you know, in my practice, like working with women who had experienced sexual abuse, they're very out of touch with their bodies. Any type of abuse. But I mean, that is probably the worst case scenario. So people become disconnected for various reasons. And then they have a hard time coming back to it. And so then they have to be taught how to do it. I think, you know, I was thinking about like, oh, well, how do you do that? And one of the things that I think is maybe one of the easiest things to do is to think about, like, if my friend came to me with this problem, what would I say to them? And I think that's probably the easiest method you could do to take a step back and get a little bit of distance and perspective. So, and that's really taking that step back and widening your view is the best way to get the most information.
Well, I was thinking while you were talking that what is the difference in my own experience between the times that I dismiss things and when I am able to notice them? And the subtle difference is when I'm able to notice them is when I am caring. I have a sense of care for myself, right? Like if I'm dismissing it, I'm just trying to plow through, which I think is so common in this firefighting population, of course. It's like there's too many other things to care about than myself. But I think really noticing patterns and symptoms is about having, like I said, that curiosity. But from that, like, in order to have that curiosity, you have to have a sense of self-care. So what you said about, hey, what would you do if your friend did that? I think that's the easiest way to access that sense of self-care because it does not come naturally for most of us.
Yeah. And that's a good point. I've had a lot of discussions with people lately around self-compassion. And firefighters in general are the most compassionate group of people, but it's all directed outward.
Right.
We know that Marcy is not your primary doctor. I just want to put that out there. So the AFFMEs are very important. But just remember, as Marcy talked about, women seem to be better about having a team of professionals sort of surround them. And I'd like to encourage people to keep that up. I'd like to thank you both for being here and bringing all these things to light and for your insight and invaluable information. Next time we meet, we're going to dive a little bit more into some of the mental health factors for female firefighters. So for now, I think we're going to leave it at that. And I'm going to say, I'm your host, Jen Payton. Until next time, this is Listen Up L27.
Listen Up L27 is brought to you by Seattle Firefighters Healthcare Trust and Local 27. I'm your host, Jen Pennington, and until next time, stay safe and stay healthy.